This is the first lecture in animal development. I call it Overview and Fertilization. We're going to begin, what I'm going to begin with in the first few slides is to sort of give you a broad overview of this process of development, because I want you to get, sort of see the forest before we see the individual trees. And so we're going to sort of take the 30,000-foot view. And if we think about growth and development, we can divide it into four stages. Stage one, we've already learned about it. It's called gametogenesis. It deals with the formation of sperm and the formation of eggs. We've talked about that. Stage two is what I call embryonic development, and this is what happens from the moment of fertilization until birth. Okay, so for us, it would be the time in the mother's uterus. Stage three would be considered birth to puberty, because that's when an organism becomes reproductively mature. And then finally, stage four would be puberty to death, the aging process. So that's kind of, if you want to divide this whole thing up into four stages, and then you can look at each stage. It turns out that most first-year biology texts, ours included, really only cover the first two stages. And we've already covered gametogenesis, so now we're going to look at stage two, embryonic development. If you want to study stage three or stage four, when you go to college, you can take specific courses that deal with child development and, an aging process and all this sort of thing. But really, we're going to focus in on these two because that's the curriculum that the college board is going to be testing us on. So I want to walk through the stages of embryonic development and sort of give you a broad brush overview. And we'll begin with fertilization, which, of course, is, we all know, when the sperm penetrates the egg, and you've got these two haploid cells that now form a diploid cell. And this diploid cell, this very, very first diploid cell, is called a zygote, okay, which is kind of funny because it's the very first cell that we all were at one time, yet it's, starts with the last letter in the alphabet. It's kind of ironic, but anyhow, oh well. Now, the next process that occurs is called cleavage. Now, cleavage is a specific term used in biology, in embryology, which is what we're talking about now, where you've got cell division, but you don't have cell growth. So if you imagine the zygote is a cell, what happens to the zygote is it divides into two and then divides again into four and then into eight and then into 16, yet the size doesn't get any bigger. So you have a lot of cells, but all those cells are the same size as the original zygote. Does that make sense to you? That's what cleavage ends up causing. You end up, after going through cleavage, with what's called a morula. And so a morula is simply a solid mass of cells. It's about the same size as a zygote, yet instead of being one cell, it's many cells. You then end up with what's called a blastula. And a blastula is where the morula changes so that now the center becomes this liquid. It's filled with liquid. There's no cells there anymore. It's kind of an open space full of liquid. I mean, the way to think about a blastula is I like to think of a basketball. A basketball, unlike, let's compare like a baseball with a basketball. A baseball is a solid. A basketball actually has this outer layer, and then the inside is hollow. That's kind of the comparison with a morula and a blastula. That's kind of the way to think about it. That's in just very, very general terms. In my next slide, we talk about the gastrula. And the gastrula is yet one more stage. And so the way to think about the gastrula is this. Imagine a balloon. And imagine you take a balloon and you start pushing. Obviously a balloon is malleable. It's made out of, this rubber. And as you press on the balloon, you could, if the balloon weren't too filled up with air, you could start pushing the outside of the balloon, and you could actually start making a new space, right? You've got the space obviously inside the balloon, but you could start poking it, and then the outer part of the balloon starts going inside the balloon, and you've got a new, so you're creating a new space. That's what the gastrula is. The process is called gastrulation, where it's literally an invagination of the wall of the blastula, and you make a new space. This new space will end up becoming the digestive tract, right? And it makes sense. You start pushing in the outer wall of the blastula, and you're making a new, basically, area inside the blastula, and that's going to become the digestive tract. Also, during gastrulation, what we call the three primary germ layers or three primary tissue layers are created, and they're called the ectoderm, mesoderm, and endoderm. And what's cool about these three tissue layers is that we can actually, and we'll talk about this tomorrow, you can actually track where each of these cell types goes through embryonic development, and you can find out all ectoderm becomes this kind of tissue and this kind of tissue. All mesoderm becomes this kind of tissue and this kind of tissue. All endoderm becomes, you know, so we can actually follow the fate of these three different tissues, these three different primary tissue types, and find out what they end up becoming. It's kind of cool. Okay, then we've got the extraembryonic membrane development. So in amniotes, we happen to be an amniote. Any reptiles, birds, and mammals are all amniotes. It turns out that the tissue that is outside the membrane will develop to support embryonic development. And that's why we call this extraembryonic membrane development. So extra means outside the embryo, okay? And we'll talk about what that extraembryonic membrane development, you know, we'll talk about that in the next couple days. Finally, you get what's called organogenesis, which, of course, you see the word genesis there. And so this is the creation of organs. And so these primary germ layers, the ectoderm, the mesoderm, and the endoderm, will end up becoming brain, heart, kidney, liver, the digestive tract, and so forth. And that's, you know, that's the final stage of embryonic development, when you actually form organs. Okay, so I've kind of given you a broad overview of what we're going to talk about over the next few days. Today, we're specifically going to look at fertilization. And so I start off with kind of a funny cartoon from Gary Larson's. And at the bottom, you can't see it because I didn't pull the screen down enough, but it says, how the human egg is often deceived. You know, so you kind of think of, well, you know, obviously, only one sperm makes it into the egg, right? All these thousands and thousands of sperm are hoping, yes, to make it inside. So here's Gary Larson's version of how this might happen. So you've got one sperm coming up going, a phone repairman, need to check your lines, ma'am, right? Another one comes up, insurance salesman, mind if I step inside? And then finally you got the guy up at the top, package for you to sign, ma'am, you know. Anyway, you know, how is one of these guys going to actually get inside the egg and cause fertilization? So we're going to talk about that now. One of the interesting things is, a couple of years ago, they talked about how the sperm actually finds the egg, and it turns out that they actually smell it. The egg gives off a chemical, because think about it, sperm are just moving through a totally dark, they can't, you know, there's no light. How do they know where to go? How do they know to go up, because there's two fallopian tubes. How do they know which fallopian tube to go up and find the egg? And so they're following a chemical scent. They're smelling their way up to the egg, okay? And that's what these recent, a couple years ago, these articles talked about. So one of the things I want to talk about is ourselves and sea urchins. And the reason is because when you actually look at the study of embryology, which is what we're going to do over the next couple days, we're going to talk about some other creatures besides ourselves. We're going to talk about sea urchins, we're going to talk about frogs and chickens, and you might be asking yourself, well, wait a minute, why aren't we talking about us? You know, I don't want to hear about what a sea urchin does. But it turns out embryology has been a science for several hundred years. They've done a lot of research trying to figure out how things develop. And some of the classic experiments were done using sea urchins, frogs, chickens. And so we're going to kind of look at those famous experiments. That's why we look at these other organisms. Now, to just start you off, I want to just sort of compare mammals with sea urchins, just to show you that we're actually pretty similar. So if you look at this illustration on the right, you'll see that mammals have, if you look at the egg, you know, the mammalian egg, you'll see in my little picture here, the outermost layer, which is colored red, is called the cumulus, just like cumulus clouds, right? Can you all say it for me? Cumulus. And the follicle cells are found, in a gelatinous matrix here. And then there's a sort of orange layer, which is called the zona pellucida. Can everyone say that, zona pellucida? And this is a sort of extracellular, so it's outside the cell, and it's a matrix of glycoproteins, which are carbohydrates with proteins. And then finally, in the center, colored in sort of purple or blue, is the actual egg cell itself. Now, you can see that sea urchins are very similar to us. They, instead of having a cumulus, they have a jelly coat, and the jelly coat is a non-cellular gelatinous matrix. Next, in the orange layer, you get what's called the vitelline layer, or vitelline envelope. Can everyone say that for me? Vitelline. And it's similar to the zona pellucida. And then finally, you get the purple-blue cell. Now, the reason that they studied sea urchins is because they're very closely related to us because they are deuterostomes. And if you remember that deuterostomes, the word deutero means second, and stome means mouth. And so the mouth forms secondarily, okay? And you can go back to the beginning of the course, and we talked all about deuterostomes and so forth. So that's we're very closely related to these guys. By the way, what phylum are the sea urchins in? Does anyone remember? I heard someone say it. Echinodermata, spiny skin. Yeah. What else is an echinodermata? Anybody know? Starfish? What else? Sea urchins? Sea cucumbers? They're all echinodermata. Okay, let's talk about fertilization in the sea urchin. So the process happens, you can see in my picture in the next slide, a sperm comes in contact with the egg's jelly coat. The acrosomal reaction occurs. Remember, the acrosome is in the front of the head, or the head of the sperm, and it has these enzymes that dissolve this jelly coat, and then from out of the acrosome comes a protrusion. And the protrusion then grows, and this protrusion is called the acrosomal process. And then, in the next slide, you'll see the growth of the acrosomal process continues. It binds to receptors on the vitelline layer, which is colored purple here, and it continues to grow until it binds with the plasma membrane, which is just beyond the vitelline layer. You can see it's labeled there. And then, on my next slide, what happens is, as soon as the acrosomal process fuses with the plasma membrane, what happens is you get what is known as fast block to polyspermy. And if you just break down the word, polyspermy, mini sperm, it's a block to getting more than one sperm inside the egg. You don't want more than one sperm, right? So you got to block other sperm from getting in. So as soon as the first sperm has its acrosomal process bind to the plasma membrane, within 1 to 3 seconds, you'll get a dramatic influx of sodium ions, which causes a depolarization of the entire egg membrane, which prevents more sperm from coming in. So that's the immediate thing that happens to prevent what we call polyspermy. Now, on my next slide, you'll see that once the sperm nucleus enters the egg, then you get what's happened is a cortical reaction. And that is known as slow block to polyspermy. And what that is, it occurs within about a minute of the fusion here. And inside the egg, the endoplasmic reticulum inside the egg cell has lots of calcium. The calcium is released into the egg. The release of calcium ions signals these things called cortical granules. There's little vesicles full of, they're called cortical granules. They will bind to the plasma membrane and dump their contents into this area between the plasma membrane and the vitelline layer called the perivitelline space, and that will literally form a this very impermeable membrane that will no longer allow any sperm. It's kind of like pouring concrete all the way around, if you want to think about it, all the way around the egg cell, prevents any more sperm from possibly coming in. And it's called the fertilization membrane. Okay? And finally, just to show you that mammals are pretty similar to sea urchins, on my last slide, I referred to a page number and a figure in the book. And you can see, hey, this picture is a picture of what happens in mammals. That's what happens in us. And it's pretty similar to what happens in sea urchins. You know, instead of having the vitelline layer, we call it the zona pellucida, but you have the same kind of process occurring, okay, just to show you. And that's just a quick overview of how fertilization occurs and how we've evolved a process of preventing more than one sperm getting into the egg. Okay, that's it for today.